Okay, today we are doing Yoash and Zechariah. Our king and prophet match is Yoash and Zechariah. These are people not so well known.
Just an extra one here.
Okay, I have another thing for you. Remember these?
Yes,
yes, I do.
We had these before. I do remember these.
Okay. Okay. Our text is going to be Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Chaf Bet. But first, let's look at this chart. Okay? This is a chart of all the kings of Israel, of Yehuda, and of the northern tribes. Yehuda is on the left, the northern tribes are on the right. Okay, it starts with the split. There were four kings over all of Israel before this split. That was Shaul, Ishbosheth, David, and Shlomo. In the life of Shlomo's son, Rehavam, you see him on the left there, Rehabam, he split the kingdom, and Jeroboam, you see him on the right, Yeravam. So Rehavam and Yeravam, 2964 from creation, both started ruling for a split kingdom. Everyone see this? Okay. Mm-hmm. If you get to know these pictures, the pictures, you'll get a quick framework of, let's look at Asa for a second. Uh-huh. You see Asa, the A means he destroyed idolatry. Uh-huh. The B means he spread Torah. Uh-huh. The C means, you see that graph that the stock market going up? Brought prosperity. Okay, you can actually see the A, B, C, D on the side. If you can read that small, you see, brought prosperity, spread observance of Torah, destroy the idol worship. You with me?
You have
good eyes. Okay? So if you get to know some of the trends of these pictures, you see that in all of these, there's just one of, look at Yehoshaphat and Ahav. They started ruling about the same time. Ahav 3 years before, right? They were about the same age. And you look at the two that I circled, G under Yehoshaphat and H under Ahav. Everybody see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So that is a chuppah with a handshake underneath. Everyone see what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. So that is the same picture. It's a picture of a chuppah with a handshake underneath. What do you think that means?
Trying to unite the kingdom.
If you read it, they
united the kingdom, right? Yeah. The G on the Yehoshaphat means alliance with Ahav, right? Intermarriage of the two houses. And if you look under H, it says Ahav's daughter, Atalia, married to Crown Prince Joram of Judah. Crown Prince means the oldest son of the current king, who's waiting to be king when his father dies. You get it?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you see it says Yehoram down there?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now, do you see under Yehoram and Ahaziah? And Ahaziah on, you see there were two sons born. Those are not two different people, those are four different people.
Oh, wow.
They both had a Yehoram and Ahaziah.
And an Ahaziah and Yehoram. Okay. Now, do you see that image? I should have encircled it under Ahaziah. Do you see like there's a hand with someone saying, "Help! Help! I'm inside here. I'm a little king."
Help!
And someone is abusing me, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that iron fist, right? That iron fist is either Jezebel or Atalia, but probably Atalia. Right, it says
dominated by
wife Atalia, or dominated by mother Atalia. In the Ahaziah on the other side, it says dominated by mother Jezebel. Okay, you've heard of Jezebel, right?
Yes.
Jezebel was Atalia's mother. Okay? Atalia is the product of this, what might appear to be an admirable attempt at uniting the kingdoms.
Yes.
Right? Alan, can we close that door, please? So, Atalia is what that couple produced, a girl. Okay? And if you, as you can see from the Yehuda side, this girl, Atalia, actually
becomes the queen.
Becomes the queen. Mm-hmm. She ruled for 6 years.
Is this the only queen that we ever had?
Yes. The only one who ruled, not be... Okay. So if you look at Atalia's 6 year tenure, it's not good. She broke the luchos, led to horrible destruction, until you, can you guess what that dagger means?
She was
finally assassinated. Okay? So this is the topic of our discussion today. This unfortunate result of what might appear to be an admirable attempt at uniting the kingdoms. But since it was with a terrible king, Ahav, and his terrible wife, Jezebel, it did not produce perhaps the best of results. Okay? So if you look at when Ahav and Jezebel were finally run out of town, meaning killed, a king named Yehu was tasked with wiping out the remnant of Ahav's line. It took him about 2 or 3 years to do it. And in so doing, he killed Ahaziah. Mm-hmm. He killed Jehoram. Uh-huh. You got it?
Uh-huh.
And he killed all 70 sons of Ahav. Okay? So Yehu got rid of Ahaziah and Jehoram, the descendants of Ahav. He also got rid of Jehoram and Ahaziah, the descendants of Jezebel and Atalia. Mm-hmm. All right? Dominated by wife Atalia, dominated by mother Atalia. You see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jehoram was first dominated by his wife. Then Ahaziah was dominated by his mother. And then Atalia, after Yehu killed off all four of these, somehow managed. I don't know how you get to do this. Who followed her? She must have had the army behind her. Right? How else? But she managed to grab the throne. And listen to what she did. She killed off every single male heir to David's throne that she could get her hands on. And only one survived, and that's our story today. So please turn to Divrei Hayamim.
Atalia.
Yes. Now, do you see a terrible irony here? That one time David was responsible for an entire household being killed off, except for one survivor?
Yeah.
Nov, the city of Kohanim. Anyone remember that sole survivor's name?
No. No way. Wasn't it Shaul? Who?
The sole survivor of the Kohanim. He starts with Nay. He joined David because David said, your enemy is my enemy. Whoever wants to kill you wants to kill me. That should make us friends. That's Midoraisa. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. His name is Evyatar. Okay, remember the name? Evyatar. The Gemara, which is always abounds in this kind of ironies, said that if Evyatar had not survived, Yoash would not have survived. I'm just saying. It's a Gemara that says David was responsible for a whole entire household being wiped out, except for one. So you see like an irony that the same thing happens to him. But okay, one managed to survive. All right. We'll let one survive by Yisrael. Divrei Hayamim Bet, chapter 22, verse 10. It's a short parak. Chapter 22, verse 10. What page is
it?
1984. Someone is watching over us. Big brother.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So when Atalia saw that Yehu killed off all of her sons, Atalia Ema Chazel Rasoki Meis Bino, but Tokom B'Tadaber is Kol Zerah HaMamlechol LeBeis Yehuda. She started to gather all of the descendants of David, all of the house of Judah that might one day possibly be king. But Tikach Yehoshavas Bas HaMelech is Yoash Ben Achazyahu, but Tignovo So Mitoch Bnei HaMelech Hamumasim, but Titeno Sobes Menikto Bachadar Amitos. She whisked away. Remember the name, Yehoshavas. You ever hear of her? Who ever heard of her? But I'll tell you this. If not for Yehoshavas, the line of David would have been destroyed.
Didn't they say it was always a Kohen Gadol or something? Did it?
We'll get to that. Okay, Yehoshavas saved. Now, I'm sure they would have come up with some kind of child of another son of David somewhere, but this was from the line of the throne. Okay? You know, I guess if the people you know could be king are all wiped out, then you got to go to cousins and then the second cousin, go and find someone. Right? Okay, so this woman, Yehoshavas, hid this young child, Yoash, and she got a nursemaid because he was only 1 year old, right? And this child was spared. That's verse 12. She was hidden for 6 years. Va'atalia moleches al ha'aretz. Atalia was ruling. Now, Divrei Hayamim, really, it does not mirror Sefer Melachim here. Divrei Hayamim fills in for Sefer Melachim. Sefer Melachim tells you a little about her rule, and here it just goes straight to the seventh year, and it says in the seventh year, someone named Yehoyada. Hitchazak Yehoyada. Now obviously, how do you get even with such a terrible monarch, whether it's Caligula or Nero or whatever it is? You have to get the army. Because if they have the defense, who can fight them? They're surrounded by people, right? You have to get the army. So after 6 years, this guy, Yehoyada, does that name sound familiar to you?
Yeah, is it in a Haftarah?
From where? Yes, we just had Haftarah 2 weeks ago. Shabbos Shkolim has the Haftarah of Yehoyada. Our story, however, is not about Yehoyada. It's going to be about his son, Zechariah.
Ah.
Does anybody know any one thing about this person, Zechariah?
The fact that he's a Kohen, he talked about, I mean, kind of predicted Hanukkah, so to speak.
No, that's a different Zechariah. Live 250 Zechariah. Years from now.
It's a different Zechariah.
That's Chagai Zechariah Malachi.
All right.
This
right.
is a different Zechariah. Right. Okay? And I'm just taking a canvas. And most people don't know who it is. What's interesting is that his story is not in the Book of Kings. It's not in Melachim. His story is only told in Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles. And it's a very short story, but we read about him on Tisha B'Av. That's what I handed out to you before.
Ah.
There is a big poem about him. And I don't want to read it yet. That would be a spoiler if I read it now.
Okay.
Don't spoil it yet. Okay. So Yehoyada strengthened himself and got the army behind him. And finally, they managed to kill that witch, Atalia. Right? But before they killed her, they actually appointed Yoash, at the tender age of 7, they appointed him as king. When she heard this, she started screaming, Kesher, Kesher, there's a rebellion. She was absolutely right. And once Yoash is actually king, she's not going to have a chance to kill him now. Right, he surely has the army behind him. She didn't last another day. Okay? So that's my story is not about Atalia today. My story is about Zechariah. But before that, it's about Yoash. Yoash, as you can see, look at the bottom of the left side. He's the last guy on our page because that's all we need today. Okay, you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Yoash. The first sign, you see this, these things right here?
Yeah.
Okay. It means that he was the high priest Yehoyada was a regent during the king's infancy. That means that this means to say that the Kohen Gadol, Chazal say he was, but assume he was, the Kohen Gadol had a great political power in Israel at that time, which was a good thing for us. Mm-hmm. Okay? All right. B, also a good sign for us, isn't it? Right? Strength in Torah observance. Right? C, we've come to learn, is also a good sign. He destroyed idol worship, which had flourished under Atalia, right? And under Ahaziah, and under Yehoram. Now, by the way, Torah being violated is a very common picture on the Israel side, you see? Practically each time, you have either a golden calf, a broken luchos, a destroyed city, an assassination. The northern tribes never really had any good king, really. But at least Yehuda tended to have, Asa was a good king, Yehoshaphat was a good king, and they ruled pretty long together, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but look what happens, Yehoram, Ahaziah, and Atalia. Yoash, this seven-year-old king, things looked so bleak in his time. And you know that Atalia very much defiled the temple. The temple fell into horrible disrepair. It doesn't take 6 years to fall for a pristine room to fall into disrepair. It takes 30, 40 years for that to happen. But when you are defiling it purposely, it fell into disrepair. It did. That's why Yoash is the big guy in the Parsha Shkolim Haftorah. Because why do we read that Haftorah in Parsha Shkolim? Because it's about collecting Shkolim for a big project. Okay. The temple became so decrepit that the walls got filled with cracks. What do you call cracks in the wall? Bedek habayis. That's why we call the maintenance of a shul to this day the Bedek habayis fund. If you see it stucco box where it's held to help pay the operating costs of a shul, the stucco box is going to say Bedek habayis. If it says chesed, that goes to poor people. If it says Bedek habayis, it's going to the upkeep of the shul. Okay, fine. So this Yoash set his mind to rebuilding the temple. Now you see the D. You see that black thing? That's the temple. You see that? What's that thing? It's like a mason's. Yeah. It's used to smooth out to smooth out the mortar. You see? Can you picture that? It's not an iron. It's
a
trowel.
Yes. Okay. But wait a second. Hold a second. This is devastating. Look at E. How could you have the man who let the Kohen Gadol have such power? He promulgated the observance of Torah. He destroyed idolatry. He fixed the temple for which we have a big haftorah for this guy. And then what?
He turned to idolatry.
How could that be? That's the most devastating picture in this whole page. I understand all those broken luchos under Achav, under Omri, under Zimri, under Elah. I see it under all those guys. I'm not devastated by that. But under Yoash? No, look at E.
Turned
to idolatry after Yehoyada's death. Oy vey, Yehoyada was so important for Yoash. Without Yehoyada, surely he's the one who gave Yehoshabbas the wherewithal to hide him, right? This king became king because of Yehoyada. We owe so much to him historically. And what happens when he dies? Please read this with me in Let's turn now to chapter 23. It says, Vayichros 23, verse 16. 23:16. Please read, Vayichros Yehoyada bris beino ubein kol ha'om. The Sfardim start the Haftorah from here. Sfardim like to bring in Yehoyada into this mix. Okay, the Ashkenazim start from the when Yoash becomes king. The purpose of the end of chapter 23 is to let the reader know unequivocally that it's because of Yehoyada that Yoash became king. If not for Yehoyada, Yoash probably would have been killed by Ataliah's forces and would never have become king. Okay? And he so significantly rebuilt the temple. He got rid of all of the tumma, all of the impurity that was there, the tumas mace, tumas avodah zarah, everything he took out. He fixed it, he repaired it. What an amazing thing a seven-year-old started to do. Right? It's also amazing, we had one king who was eight when he became king, who also ruled in a terrible time. Yoshiyahu. Shlomo was 12, according to Chazal. Yoshiyahu. The king after Menashe and Amon. And he took over the reins of Yehuda after almost 60 years of polytheism at the hands of Menashe and his son Amon. And he turned things around also. Sometimes it's a very young king because he's still young enough to take advice from the right people. Right? Okay. So these young kings really turned things around, and when Yoash was 7, this is now chapter 24. Okay? Got it?
Yeah.
It says, Vayas Yoash Hayashar Bene Hashem, Kol Yemei Yehoyada HaKohen. Usually when it says he did the right thing, it means he did the right thing for his whole kingdom. Most kings were either fully good or fully bad. This is such a sad story that someone who starts off as good and as wholesome as Yoash would somehow turn and have that E. Right?
Maybe, could you think it's maybe it's rebellion against Yehoyada because he was so much dominant. So as a king absorbing Judah, he doesn't have to absorb the...
Could be that after dominating for so long, this figure, now that he's no longer here, now I have free reign to do what he may have wanted to do all along. Yes, Shana?
Yeah. Also was started off good and he ended badly.
Okay, there are plenty of people in the Bible that you can say that. I'm talking about the kings. The kings, generally, if you look at all this entire chart, I didn't give you the back chart, but this goes through the entirety of the kings. Everybody messes up sometimes. You know, you do one bad thing. That doesn't get you, broken luchos. Broken luchos means it wasn't a one-shot deal. He really started to turn towards bad stuff. How is that? Look at everybody else. You're either all good or all bad. Now, I don't mean to look at everything in such black and white terms. The Gemara finds good things in Achav. He was a uniter of the people, right? And we certainly can read the Bible and find some bad things in David or Shlomo. But the point I'm trying to make is that they remain overall good or overall bad. Here, he starts off good for 20 years, and then he just something happens in the middle of his reign, and that thing is the death of Yehoyada. Okay, which gets us to Zechariah. So now we are. Okay, look what the Bible calls Ataliah in chapter 24. Okay. So in chapter 24, verse 6, you see Yehoyada is really the one enacting all these reforms. He's the one saying, why haven't we learned all the laws of Moshe? Why haven't we brought back the Torah that we know is supposed to guide us? Right? It tells you why. Ki Ataliyahu Amer Shas. Right? Bonel Partsu Es Beis HaElokim. Because Ataliyah, this wicked woman, you remember, who is her mother? Jezebel. Jezebel is the daughter of the king of Tzidon. Jezebel brought polytheism into the northern tribes. Now her daughter is ruling the southern tribes? This is not a good situation. Okay. All right, but now that we're getting her out of the way, okay, take a look at chapter 24, verse 15. By the way, if you're holding, this is an awful amount of time for one king in Divrei Hayamim, outside of David. Right? There's more about Yoash in Divrei Hayamim than Shlomo. Shlomo gets a lot of in Malachim, but very little in Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim is mostly about David. Okay. So look what happens. By Yizkan Yehoyada, I'm reading Pasuk Tesvav, chapter 24, verse 15. Everyone with me? By Yizkan Yehoyada, by Yisba Yomim Vayamos. Yehoyada grew very old. Get this. This is the oldest age that's listed in the Tanakh, right? After Moshe. Hear that again?
Wow.
No one lives older than 120 after Moshe in the Tanakh. I'm talking in the Tanakh. There are Midrashim that say Yishai lived a very long time, Eliyahu lived a very long time. Those dates are not given in the Bible. Right? But it does say that this wonderful man, Yehoyada, lived to be 130. Ben Mea Ushloshim Shana B'Mosa. He was old, he was 130. And lived by Yisbayamim. He means he had Sviya in his old days. David that he died, he was given a beautiful eulogy, they gave him a great burial, he was given a very important place to be buried, amongst the great ones. But look what happened. After his death, the officers of Israel came and bowed down to the king. And the king started to listen to what the people wanted. Now, you see what's going on here? A king is not there to be popular and to listen to what the people want, because who knows what the people are going to want. The king is there to make leadership decisions even when they're unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
The king is not supposed to take, to just put his finger to the wind and see what the people are going to think is popular. That's what Shaul does. Yeah. That's in this week's Haftorah, right? He disobeys God because he says the people wanted the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
So David does something very similar with regards to spoils. Do you remember when the Amalekim they captured all of the women from the camp of David? 400 women and their children, right? They didn't kill them because they wanted them as ransom. Why kill them? What are we gaining from that? We want a ransom. We want to get a lot of money for them, right? So when it came time that David heard about this, the men were very upset. They were very upset with David. How could he let this happen? And David rallied the men to come and David was, of course, a very fierce warrior himself, to redeem those women and children. But not all the men wanted to. Some were too scared. How does that work? I mean, shouldn't all of David's close-knit comrades be all warriors and love a fight like this? Well, not in this case, right?
Hmm.
So the men who stayed behind, you know, they watched the camp, but whether, you know, they did certain things to guard the camp while the others were away. And these were successful in bringing home everybody. However that works, but they were successful. And when they came back with all of the spoils that were taken from them, all their property, the men who fought said that we are willing to give back the women and children to the men who didn't fight, but we are keeping their spoils. They're going to have to start from scratch about their property. If you didn't go out to fight to return the spoils, you don't get them.
Right.
Because as sure as human nature is, David, if you keep doing things this way, no one's ever going to want to fight a battle for you. Why should the people who go out to fight get the same thing, not any more than the people who stay behind? Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So David convinced them that the men who stayed behind were guarding our camp so that no one would conquer us while we're away and steal whatever we have left. Right?
Makes sense.
And that they were serving a purpose, right? And that this is a chok be Israel, that you give everybody back their spoils. I tell you this because it is really parallel to this week's Haftarah. The spoils of war, where the people want to do X, there is a king. In the case of Shaul, we know that X should not be done because it would defy an explicit command from Shmuel. But that's what the people want. So he's thinking to himself, okay, I'll let the people take. And if I have to explain, I'll explain. I'll just say, what could I do? Come on, I'm the new king. I have to be popular, you know. Right? By the way, that's half bad. He lies. Because the narrative says that he took the sheep. He had pity on the best sheep. He, not pity, but he had chemla, you know, to waste the best. And then he blames it on the people. So that's what some of the Mephoshim say was really his downfall. But when David speaks, he speaks with a clear, I mean, you know, the mob mentality. The mob can just turn on him. Who knows if one person said, when David said, no, everybody shares exactly the same. Those who went and those who don't. And what would have happened if 10 of the people in the back says, that's crazy, that's great. There would be the whole mob, right? But instead, he commanded, with an iron fist, he commanded that position. Mm. Right? That's leadership. Leadership is not just telling people what they want to hear. Mm. Right? Everyone clear with that? Mm. Okay. Therefore, when Yoash no longer has Yehoyada bossing him around, or at least guiding him properly... Right? And the people come to say, it says, Ba'u Sare Yehuda. And it doesn't even say what they came to say. It says, Oz Shoma. You see? Oz Shoma Melech Aleihem. Can you tell me, what just stylistically, why not Ba'yishma? That's the biblical grammar.
He started listening.
And Oz Shoma gives the sense that, like, it was continuous. He was already listening. He was... It's not like he had to wait for them to tell. He was already moving in this direction himself. Can I give you some examples of this? Vashem pakade sora kasher amar. Rashi says she was already pregnant before the previous story when she was by Avimelech. Mm. Remember Rashi says late Sonny Hador said that Avimelech is the father of this child. Vashem pak. If it said vayifkod Hashem et sora, then that means that chapter 21 happened after chapter 20. She was with Avimelech, and then she became pregnant. No. Vashem pokare sara means that this was ongoing, an ongoing situation. Interestingly, or coincidentally, in a similar stylistic grammatical form, v'ha'adam yoda eschava ishto. Chapter 4 of Bereishis. Man had known his wife, Chava. Why is it that way? It should be v'yeda ha'adam eschava ishto. This is a big polemic with Christians. The Christians teach, you see that, I mean, it's the order that's in the Bible. Chapter 3 is the Garden of Eden sin. Chapter 4, they start to have children. Because Christians teach that there could not have been children without that sin. It's because of the sin that what God had in mind for us besides that is, I'll let the Christian theologians work out. But it's only as after that sin that they could have had such relations. So comes Rashi to tell us it's not Vayeda ha'adam eschava ishto, it's Vayeda'adam yoda eschava ishto, which means that had happened, I'll take a second, it means that she was already expecting before the sin. They were engaging in a fully wholesome act of kedusha, of marital relations, with no yitzhara or no sinful act behind it, and this was before the sin in the garden. What's interesting, I'll just tell you this, but fascinating Latin book called Elucidarium. It's written in the 11th century by a church father named Onarius, and it's written like the Kuzari. It's questions and answers from a pupil in a church to his church father. And it's one of the questions in the book is, what did Adam and Eve do on their first day in the garden? Now, Onarius must have asked the Jew this question, because the answer Onarius gives in the 11th century is a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, to the T. It's so obvious that it's plagiarized because it even uses a terminology that is clearly from the Gemara. It goes hour by hour, the same 10 hours of the same 10 hours in his answer. It just, it switches one. Hour 7 and 8. Hour 7 in the Gemara is, they went to bed 2 and came out 3. The Talmudic position that pregnancy used to be immediately upon the marital act and birth. The same day. So they get it, they went to bed 2, they went, came out 3, is exactly how it appears in on. So you can't, that has to be plagiarized. You wouldn't say it that way unless there was a, unless you took it from another source, right? They went to bed 2, they came out 3. And then it says, and after that, they ate from the tree. That's hour 8. Hour 9, God looked for them. Hour 10, he banished them from the garden. In Onarius, it's hour 7, they ate from the tree. Hour 8, they went to bed 2 and came out 3. Get it?
Uh-huh.
He flipped the hours 7 and 8 because I have to tell the church student, according to our understanding of Isaiah 7:14 and the virgin birth, etc., etc., that this can only have happened after such a sin. So why am I telling you this is not the thematic? This is about the grammatical form. When it says in our pasuk, please now turn back with me. When it says in our pasuk, Oz Shoma HaMelech Aleihem, do you get the picture? Now, listen, I'm a puny human being here. Maybe I'm wrong about this. This is Bible. This is the holiest thing in the world. Who knows if I'm correct that this is what Shema means? I'm just trying to make sense of why this leaves from the typical biblical grammar of Vayishma HaMelech Aleihem. Right? Obviously, it says Oz. Enachinami. Oz Yoshir, right? It should have said Oz Yishma HaMelech Aleihem. You get it?
Yeah.
Okay. That would be the typical biblical Hebrew that you're used to. What's Oz Shoma? It's not a stretch. Like these two examples, and I have 100 more if you want, is that it's an ongoing situation. He was already moving in that direction. Okay. Vayazvu es beis Hashem Elokei Avoseihem. What? This very house that this guy was the one. Look, it's picture D. Oy. It's such a downer. It's awful to read the Haftorah of Parshas Shkolim and then read this. Mm. Right? He's the one who fixed things and he let it come again to disrepair. Remember on our way here I said, you wouldn't believe this. Who could believe such a thing? Mm. How could such a thing happen? It's human beings. I don't know. Something convinced him that this, some bad stuff happened to him. Maybe one of his kids fell out the window and he had a prayer vigil and nothing happened. And he said, what kind of God lets this happen? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Ramban says that the reason why the Torah stresses why Yehuda's two sons died, doesn't just say they died, it says why they died.
Yeah.
No other son of Yaakov loses children. The only one in that whole story who loses children is Yaakov. Mm. But in the end, he doesn't. Right? So why does the Torah tell us why his two sons died, says Ramban? So that you shouldn't think, yeah?
Well, I don't know about Ramban, but the Torah says that God killed them.
It, in English. Yes, fine. So it looks like a divine kind of...
It's like it's not Yehuda's sin.
That's what Ramban says.
I'm sorry.
You might have thought that those two boys died because of his role in the sale of Yosef. No, they died for their own sins. Whatever Yehuda is to be punished for his role in the sale of Yosef is offset by the reward he should get for saving his life because they wanted to leave him in the pit. Right? He basically does save his life and actually does save the story. Look, when they saw him from far, I know I'm doing this a lot, it's really tangential, but when they see him from far, he says, look at that dreamer of dreams. Let's kill him and see what happens to his dreams. You idiots. You're the guys who are making his dream come true. Leave him alone and his dreams won't come true. Just, it's your, right? So, excuse me for calling the shift. I'm sure I shouldn't say talk like that. Okay, so the, I'm just going to happen? someone as great as Yoash turns things around and says, let's now. What does he bring? Vayavdu asherim v'sat sabim. Vayiketzef al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim v'ashmosam zos. Oy. They worship the Asherim, Atzabim. These are idols. Right? Oy vey. Right? So, and it says that he brought about all, it was a ketzef against Yehuda and Yerushalayim. The anger came from above because of this guilt, this iniquity. Vayishlach bahem neviim lahashivam el Hashem, vayayidu bam velo hezinu. And God sent prophets to bring them back, but they didn't listen. Do you know any names of these prophets in Sefer Melachim? There's certainly no books about them. You know, there are no Nevi'im at this time in any place of Tanakh.
Yeah,
you have Yeshayahu, who is the first Navi who gets on a stump and talks to people, at the same time as Hoshea, Micha, and Amos. Okay, you do have people like Eliyahu, Elisha, but that's not yet. Although I will tell you that Elisha is this time. Elisha is this time.
Didn't he have a school for
Nevi'im? He had a school for Nevi'im. But Elisha is dead by the time of Yoash. Eliyahu was certainly dead. Right? Elisha dies right after Yehu kills off all of Ahab's children. So, you know, this could be Elisha at some point. But he had a school of Nevi'im. What I'm trying to say is that Chazal tell us there are 48 Nevi'im who came with a message to Bnei Israel. The first is Avraham, the last is Ezra. The 46 Nevi'im in between them, not one in anybody's list of 48 can be actually identified as one of these many Nevi'im, except the one guy we're about to read about. And that's it. This is his few psukim of fame. He is not mentioned in Sefer Melachim, but we do read about him on Tisha B'Av, and I'm afraid we're going to have to start with that next week. But first, I want to finish this prophet. His name is Zechariah, and there are just four psukim about him in the Bible. Four psukim, but yet we managed to say a whole entire kina about him on Tisha B'Av. It says, V'ruach Elokim lov shoh es Zechariah. When the Spirit of God comes upon you, it like dresses you. Right? And you're clad with the Nebuah.
No,
it's 250 years later.
Yes,
right. Okay. The Spirit of God envelops, I would rather say Lav Shah is envelops. What's your English translation there? Do you see it?
Clothed?
Came over.
Spirit of God came over.
Okay. Yeah, I would prefer one word that better than came over. Yeah, clothed is...
Cloaked
would be very good.
Yeah.
That would be very good. Enveloped, I like, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
John, you're the wordsmith. You have a good word?
What was the Hebrew word?
Encompassed. Lov shoh.
Fadli push.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Dressed him to be a whole. Meaning it like it's, but it like it's attached dressed. Itself to him. Yeah. Attached itself to him. Okay, whatever it is, we understand the vision of it. And it encompassed Zechariah ben Yehoyada. So we know who he is.
Yes.
He's Yehoyada's son. He's the Kohen. Vayamod me'al la'am, and he stood above the people. Vayomer lahem, ko amar ha'elokim, lama atem ovrim es mitzvos Hashem, v'lo satzlichu. Why are you violating God's commandments? You shall not succeed in so doing. Now, you see that? Those two words are important. Lo satzlichu. Ancient man was pretty religious and superstitious.
Hmm.
Right? They wanted to explain thunder and lightning and total eclipses and lunar eclipses, which they saw pretty often, and rainbows, and they started to give, you know, various explanations for what these things are along the lines of their observances. They saw certain things that took place after some of these events. They engaged in the famous Latin fallacy, post hoc ergo propter hoc, which means after this, therefore because of this, right? Look, if all you need is one high priest who convinces someone, let's say his wife miscarried three times, and then he goes to a high priest from that he here has a reputation for helping people with their fertility issues. And he said, okay, what you have to do is as soon as you know your wife is expecting, you have to give a certain amount of charity to Hecate, who is the goddess of fertility. And then every day you have to slaughter a goat for every first day of the month. You know, it tells him to do certain things. Mm-hmm. And when she goes into labor, that's where you really have to ramp it up and, you know, and do X, Y, and Z. And then after doing all those things, you know, she gives birth to a healthy child. Now, God lets those things happen. You know, the world is gonna run the way it's supposed to run. But when those things happen, and of course they've, you know, you only stress, you know, when someone makes these miracle work, you know, of course it's gonna work some of the time, right? So this is how ancient superstitions begin. You worship your God because you want Hatzlacha. Right? I was looking over a lot of my old Musar moments. I think it was Vilna Gaon. He said, if Gan Eden were the reward for Lashon Hara and Gehenim was the punishment for learning Torah, you should still learn Torah. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that people want, they want to see some result of what they, you know, you behave good, you behave the right way, and you should be rewarded, right? God should give us the rain in its season the way he promises us, right? So they want, he says, what you're doing will not lead to Hatzlacha. He says, don't talk to us. We see it's doing very well with us. Ever since we started worshiping this God or this goddess, right, remember how I talked to Yirmiyahu at the end, chapter 44, 45? Ever since we stopped worshiping the Queen of the Heavens, that's when all the trouble started. That's why the Babylonians destroyed us, because we stopped worshiping the Queen of the Heavens. What? But how can you convince people of that, you know, that they're being absurd? Okay? So he says, it's not going to be Hatzlacha, because that's what people want and expect from their worship of their gods. Ki azavtem es Hashem v'yazov eschem. You left God, God has left you. They'll say, fine, that's fine with us. We're going to keep worshiping these gods. And you know what? They let us have more fun. Right? You should see what these goddesses allow in their temples. You should see what these goddesses want in their temples. Whoa. Right? Okay. Vayikshuru alav, vayirgemuhu even b'mitzvas hamelech b'chatzar beis Hashem. They rebelled against him. Vayikshuru here doesn't mean so much rebellion, but that's usually what it means. Vayikshuru means they made a kesher. They made a plot. He's better. Yeah. Right. Remember when Izebel heard that everyone turned on her, she screamed out, kesher, kesher. Right. Okay, so they stoned him to death.
Saved him. He killed.
The son of the man who saved him, yes. He stoned him to death, b'chatzar beis Hashem. In the chatzar of the beis HaMikdash? On Har HaBayis? Yes, yes, that's what you're looking at there. That's what we're going to have to start with next week. So what happened? V'lo zachar yoash hamelech ha-chesed asher aso yahu yada. Adele, you just said this. Yodav Vivimo, Vayaharog Espino, and he killed his own son. Ukimoso Omar, and when he died, just as he was dying, he said, Yere Hashem V'yidrosh.
He'll be punished.
May God avenge my blood. Tune in next week. I got to leave you wanting more. We're going to start with. So please cast this stuff. You have to go upstairs.